Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Dostaya Bhutale Srimati Bhagavatam Shamatanami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Navasesha Sanyavari Vishkati Devi Sarane. Om Ganatame Namdasya Janajana Sulakaya Chakshus Militam Dena Tatsmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Dena Vitale Sayam Bhutalamayam Dadatista Vanja Kalpatubas Deprivis in the Bay Bachapatitanam Bhaganadu Vachanam Namaha. Hearing the pastime of
taking care of
perfect. The pastime of Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj and Lord Vamandev, of course it's the pastime of Bali Maharaj and Lord Vamandev, because Bali Maharaj is the devotee and Lord Vamandev is the Lord. He is Krishna, who has come in a very special dwarf Brahmana form to, on one level, cheat Bali Maharaj and take away all his material possessions in a cheating way, not even in a straightforward way. Because Mother Aditi has prayed for Vamandev to come as her son to protect the demigods who are devotees of the Lord. So on one level, Vamandev has come to cheat Bali Maharaj and take everything. But actually, although he takes everything on one level, he will give far more than he could take. Because if one sacrifices something that he is bound to lose, what is the loss, ultimately? What is actually lost if one gives away something that one is already destined to lose? And time will take everything. And if one gets in return for what he has given away, which he was already destined to lose, if one gets in return something that will never be taken away from him, something far more wonderful and eternal, then he is really the gainer. So that is actually what Vamandev is doing. He's going to take and give. What he gives is far more than what he takes. So at this point, Bali Maharaj is performing an Aswamedha sacrifice. Why? Anyone remember why he's performing Aswamedha sacrifice? Yes, and he has to maintain it. And one needs piety to maintain. Piety is really goodness. Passion one can create, but it takes goodness, piety, to maintain. So to maintain a post that he was not really qualified for, Bali Maharaj, under the advice of the descendants of Bhriga Muni, was performing Aswamedha sacrifices. And Vamandev, very effulgent and powerful, charismatic. Charisma means power. Very powerful. People are attracted by charisma, by power. So he began to display this effulgence. He walked right into the sacrifice at the exact time when Bali Maharaj could give charity. And as soon as Bali Maharaj saw him, he was very attracted to Vamandev. Because actually he was a devotee, even though born in a demon family. So he said, "What do you want? You appear to look like you've come to beg something. What do you want? What do you want? I'll give you." So Vamandev, being very cute, just said, "What do I want? I only want 3 steps of land. But should be by my own step, by my own measurement, the measurement of my step. So take just the amount of land that one can cover in 3 steps. Because after all, one shouldn't beg more than one needs. One shouldn't take one more than one requires. So this is what I require. So I'll take that. You give me that. Bali Maharaj said to him, my boy, even though you're speaking so philosophically that one should only take what one needs, but I understand that you don't seem to be very intelligent. You seem to be just a young boy by the way you're speaking, because I'm the controller of the universe. If you ask me for a little bit, then you'll be asking, have to ask someone else or me again tomorrow for something else. So you should come, and now you are here, what you want I will give you. Be intelligent. You take villages, land, whatever you want, so that you never have to ask anyone for anything again. Gold, whatever you want. And Vamadeva replied, if one isn't satisfied with 3 paces of land, or for that matter with what one has, even if one had a whole island or the whole universe, still one wouldn't be satisfied. This is the very nature of desire. It burns like fire, and fire by definition is never satisfied regardless of the fuel that it consumes. So Vamadeva was speaking very, very, very sweetly, very philosophically, very detachedly, but yet he had a plan to take everything. So when he told Bali Maharaj that this is all I want, 3 steps of land, Bali Maharaj said, only that? He said, yes, only that. He said, all right, if that's what you want, I will give you that. So, as the last verses we read, the Supreme Personality of Godhead spoke to Bali Maharaj, this is in 28. Bali smiled and told him, all right, take whatever you like. You like this? Take it. To confirm his promise to give Vamadeva the desired land, he then took up his water pot. But, just then, understanding Lord Vishnu's purpose, Sukracharya, who is the priest of the Asuras, who brought Bali Maharaj back to life with the Sanjivani mantra, who had advised Bali Maharaj, the chief of the descendants of Bhrigu here. He was Bali Maharaj's spiritual master, and he rushed forward, overhearing this conversation between Bali Maharaj and Vamanadeva and Sukracharya, the best of the learned, immediately spoke as follows to his disciple who was about to offer everything to Lord Vamanadeva. Sukracharya Uvacha. O son of Virochana. Virochana was his father, Bali Maharaj's father, Prahlad Maharaj was his grandfather. This brahmachari, in the form of a dwarf, is directly the imperishable Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Because Sukracharya was very powerful, he understood everything. Accepting Kasyapa Muni as his father and Aditi as his mother, he has now appeared in order to fulfill the interests of the demigods. We'll read the verses until the end and then read purports after that. To the end means to 42-43. This person falsely appearing as a brahmachari is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. Hari means he who takes away. Who has come in this form to take away all your land, wealth, beauty, power, fame, and education. After taking everything from you, he will deliver it to Indra, your enemy. You have promised to give him 3 steps of land in charity. But when you give it, he will occupy the 3 worlds. You are a rascal. You do not know what a great mistake you have made. After giving everything to Lord Vishnu, you will have no means of livelihood. How then shall you live? He'll take everything. How will you maintain yourself? Vamandeva will first occupy the 3 worlds with 1 step, and later on, we'll see this is what he does. Then he will take his 2nd step and occupy everything in outer space, and then he will expand his universal body to occupy everything. Where will you offer him your 3rd step? you will certainly be unable to fulfill your promise. And I think that because of this inability, your eternal residence will be in hell. And he began to speak about the way out of this puzzle. Learned scholars do not praise that charity which endangers one's own livelihood. Charity, sacrifice, austerity, and fruitive activities are possible for one who is competent to earn his livelihood properly. They are not possible for one who cannot maintain himself. So if you give everything to him in charity, if he takes everything and then you have nothing for yourself to maintain yourself, what will be the benefit? This is not what the scholars say. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in 5 parts: for religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. You've given him 3 steps, he's going to take everything. One might argue that since you have already promised, how can you refuse? Oh, best of the demons, just take from me the evidence of the Mbavritsa Shruti, which says that a promise is truthful preceded by the word Om, and untruthful if not. So you haven't said Om before. So therefore, don't worry that you've made this statement, because there is no validity in it. He's giving him his way out. The lawyer is explaining the loophole. The Vedas enjoin that the factual result of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. The purpose of the tree is the fruit and the flowers that come from the tree. But if the bodily tree does not exist, there is no possibility of factual fruits and flowers. So if the body is destroyed by this charity, then there won't be any fruit and flowers to even be able to offer. And even if the body is based on untruth, and if someone might say, well, everything is temporary anyway, it's untrue, so what will be the loss? But even if it is untrue, he said, there cannot be factual fruits and flowers with the help of the bodily tree. You won't be able to perform the sacrifices and get the results if the body is ruined, even though it may in fact be false, if that's the argument. When a tree is uprooted, it immediately falls down and begins to dry up. Similarly, if one doesn't take care of the body, which is supposed to be untruth, in other words, if the untruth is uprooted, the body undoubtedly becomes dry. In other words, you have to take care of yourself. Don't give him everything. Don't promise him he's going to take everything. The utterance of the word Om signifies separation from one's monetary assets. In other words, by uttering this word, one can become free from attachment to money, because his money is taken away from him. To be without money is not very satisfactory. From that position, one cannot fulfill one's desires. In other words, by using the word Om, one becomes poverty-stricken. Especially when one gives charity to a poor man or beggar, one remains unfulfilled in self-realization and in sense gratification. Therefore, the safe course is to say no. Although it is a falsehood, it protects one completely. It draws the compassion of others towards oneself, and it gives one full facility to collect money from others for oneself. Nonetheless, if one always pleads that he has nothing, tell him you can't afford it. In other words, tell him you can't afford that 3 steps of land. Tell him you don't have anything. I'd like to give it to you, but I'm not able. Come back tomorrow. But then he cautions. And then if you say, I have nothing, I can't give you anything, that gives you a facility to go and ask others for things, and you can keep it all. So how fortunate you'll be. But he said, nonetheless, if one always pleads that he has nothing, he is condemned. For he is a dead body while living, or while still breathing, he should be killed. So you can't always do this, but this is an emergency. In flattering a woman to bring her under control, in joking, in a marriage ceremony, in earning one's livelihood, when one's life is in danger, in protecting cows in Brahminical culture, or in protecting a person from an enemy's hands, falsity is never condemned. Tell the bottom line, the last word, tell him no. He's going to cheat you, he's going to take everything, and then you'll be finished, you'll be in difficulty, everything will be ruined. So that's what the guru has told him. Sukracharya, who has organized Bali's power, the performance of sacrifices, everything, so much so that he has raised him from defeat to full victory and the reign over the kingdom of heaven. And this is his advice to Bali Maharaj. Tell him no, somehow or another, get out of this. Now we'll meet some of Prabhupada's purports. So the first one in 32, he says, this brahmachari is actually Lord Hari. He'll take everything from you and he'll deliver it to your enemy Indra. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in this regard that the very word Hari means one who takes away. If one connects himself with Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord takes away all his miseries. And in the beginning, the Lord also superficially appears to take away all his material possessions, reputation, education, and beauty. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, Yasyaham anugrahami hadishya tadanam shanai. The Lord said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, the first installment of my mercy towards a devotee is that I take away all his possessions, especially his material opulence, his money. This is the special favor of the Lord towards a sincere devotee. If a sincere devotee wants Krishna above everything, but at the same time is attached to material possessions, which hinder his advancement in Krishna consciousness, by tactics the Lord takes away all his possessions. Here Sukracharya says that this dwarf brahmachari would take away everything. Thus, he indicates that the Lord will take away all one's material possessions and also one's mind. If one delivers his mind to the lotus feet of Krishna, savai mana Krishna pararavindayor, one can naturally sacrifice everything to satisfy him. Although Bali Maharaj was a devotee, he was attached to material possessions, and therefore the Lord, being very kind to him, showed him special favor by appearing as Lord Vamanadev to take away all his material possessions and his mind as well. So what is fortunate and what is unfortunate from the spiritual perspective greatly differs from the material perspective. And because we tend to have a material perspective, we fear the spiritual perspective, that everything must be sacrificed for the pleasure of the Lord, for Krishna. This is actually the natural position of the soul, to sacrifice everything for the pleasure of Krishna, according to one's capacity. And that capacity is not decided by oneself, but it's decided in conjunction with Shastra, Guru, and Sadhus. And all three should be in harmony with one's mind and one's actions. So we have our plan, we tend to have our plan, that we can gradually move towards Krishna. If we are attempting the spiritual path, this is what our plan is, generally. And there's some wisdom in that, because if one tries to go too quickly to Krishna, giving everything, surrendering everything, there's such a tendency to bounce back and try to get everything back again and think that one has been cheated. I've given everything to Krishna and I'm not a pure devotee, I'm not with Krishna, so I'm nothing on the material side, I'm nothing on the spiritual side. Then one becomes to gets frantic and tries to hold on to the material side even tighter. So there's something to be said for the gradual path and the path of not surrendering everything to Krishna, but going gradually. Even Bhaktivinoda Thakur has explained that one should give up the shackles of matter slowly. But the superior path, and that path that one must come to, and the path that Krishna recommends, is the path of immediate and full surrender. And that's when bhakti begins. When one gives everything to Krishna, especially one's heart and one's mind, Sabai Krishna Para, Para Aravindayoa, that one places his mind, mana, at Krishna's lotus feet, and doesn't take anything but is satisfied just by serving Krishna, and depending on Krishna for his protection, Gotriptrey, Varanam Tata, this is where bhakti begins. This is called the path of surrender. It is not gradual. And this ultimately is required to be practicing bhakti, and ultimately required to have Krishna really reciprocate with the devotee. In fact, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in the first song of his songbook called Sharanagati that Krishna hears the prayers of the Sharanagata Vaishnavas. He doesn't listen to the prayers of those who are not surrendered to him in the same way that he listens to the prayers of the devotees that are completely surrendered to him, because the devotees who are completely surrendered to him, Tvama Kinchana Gochara, Kunti Devi says, you are their property, because they are not keeping anything in reserve. They've staked everything on you. They've given everything to you. So Krishna especially reciprocates with those devotees who give up everything for his pleasure. But sometimes, as this verse explains, the Lord, who is called Hari, Harisha Tadaram Shanai, he forces the issue. When he sees that someone is sincere, or whatever he sees, and he wants to hurry up the process of that person, he'll take everything from him. So the person doesn't have everything, anything. And then that person, that devotee, has nowhere to turn. Because when one doesn't have anything anymore, everyone rejects him. And he has nothing but Krishna. And then he calls out to Krishna with a full heart. Janmaishwaya Shutashibire Damanamana Pumam Na Eva Arhati Abhidattam Tvam Tvam Makim Tinagochara. And Krishna fully... So Krishna forces the issue when he wants to. That's his special favor. Takes away all possessions and one's mind. So that was Prabhupada's comment on text 22, on text 32 and 33. Sukhacharya says that if you give everything to him, how will you live? How will you maintain yourself? Where will your livelihood come from? So this is the way we all think. Who will maintain me? Who will take care of me? Prabhupada's purport. Bali Maharaj might argue that he had promised only three steps of land. But Sukhacharya, being a very learned Brahmana, immediately understood that this was a plan of Hari, who had falsely appeared there as a brahmachari. The words muda vatishyasikatam reveal that Sukhacharya was a Brahmin of the priestly class. Such priestly Brahmanas are mostly interested in receiving remuneration from their disciples. Therefore, when Sukhacharya saw that Bali Maharaj had risked all of his possessions, he understood that this would cause havoc not only to the king, but also to the family of Sukhacharya, who was dependent on Bali Maharaj's mercy. So he was also thinking, who will maintain you? How will you maintain yourself? But he was also thinking, how will I maintain myself? This is the difference between a Vaishnava and a Smarta Brahmana. A Smarta Brahmana is always interested in material profit, whereas a Vaishnava is interested only in satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. From the statement of Sukhacharya, it appears that he was in all respects a Smarta Brahmana, interested only in personal gain. So one has to be very careful about this. The next verse. He warns him, and it's going to happen. Vamandeva will take everything. He'll take everything with two steps. You won't even have a place to offer him your third step. And then what will happen? Because you will have lied then. You're worrying about lying now and breaking your word, but you'll lie then. And if you lie, so you're going to have to lie anyway. So lie to protect yourself. You won't even be able to offer him your third step. Here's Prabhupada's short purport. Sukracharya wanted to tell Balimaraj how he would be cheated by Lord Vaman. You have promised three steps, but with only two steps, all your possessions will be finished. How then will you give him a place for his third step? Sukracharya did not know how the Lord protects his devotee. The devotee must risk everything in his possession for the service of the Lord, but he is always protected and never defeated. By materialistic calculations, Sukracharya thought that Balimaraj would under no circumstances be able to keep his promise to the brahmachari, Lord Vamanadeva. So who turns out right? Is Sukracharya correct that Vamanadeva will take everything and he won't have a place for his third step? He's right. But by Krishna's mercy, Krishna will protect Balimaraj and he will think of a brilliant place for Vamanadeva to place his third step of his foot. So that's Krishna's protection. Vrindami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupyanti. Then he says, Sukracharya gives him an idea that this giving of three steps where he'll take everything is not according to Shastra. You should divide your wealth in five parts. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The Shastras enjoin that if one has money, one should divide all that he has accumulated into five divisions. One part for religion, one part for reputation, one part for opulence, one part for sense gratification, and one part to maintain the members of his family. At the present, however, because people are bereft of all knowledge, they spend all their money for the satisfaction of their family. Srila Rupa Goswami taught us by his own example by using 50% of all of his accumulated wealth for Krishna, 25% for his own self, and 25% for the members of his family. One's main purpose should be advanced in Krishna consciousness. So here is the essence of this formula, that if we live our life but don't advance in Krishna consciousness, what has been our gain? If we make our attempt to satisfy our desires, if we make our attempts to be dutiful and take care of all our dependents, and be righteous in that way, but we don't gain anything on the eternal level, what truly will we have gained? So therefore, Prabhupada was always so adamant. Not only Prabhupada, Prahlad Maharaj, Tarappa Dhruva Martadam, Dhaman Bhagavataniha, Dholavam Manusha Janma, pointing out that human life is actually very rare. Very, very so rare. And it should be sacrificed. The temporary, although it is temporary like other lives, like everybody is temporary. This is practically what Sukracharya had said, that it is untrue because it's temporary. But with that temporary, one can get fruit. With the body, one can gain things. So if we neglect the body, we won't gain anything. So this is really true and only true on the spiritual level. So if we can actually, and if we do actually, use our body, which is temporary, a human body, to gain spiritual benefit, then we've actually gained. So this is the point and the purpose of life. And if we use our life and don't gain anything spiritually, then we have gained nothing. So therefore, the key sentence of this purport is one's main purpose should be to advance in Krishna consciousness, and therefore one should make sacrifices to advance. And if we lose on the material level for our advancement on the eternal level, what really have we lost? Again, that point. We've lost something that we've lost anyway. When we're 80 years old or 90 years old or whatever, or if we live that long, what will we really value? What will we have that we value? Our senses will be weak, our body will be aching, all that will be valuable, what to speak of when we leave the body, is whatever spiritual knowledge of our eternal self. That will, gaining that will be our value. So one's main purpose should be to advance in Krishna consciousness. This will include Dharma, Artha, and Kam. However, because one's family members expect some profit, one should also satisfy them by giving them a portion of one's accumulated wealth. This is a Shastra injunction. 39. So practical, the practical grounding of the point. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport to 39, where he talks about the factual result of the tree of the body is the good fruits and flowers derived from it. We'll read from halfway down. Without the help of the body, that fruit cannot be gained. The Vaishnava philosophy therefore recommends yukta vairagya. It is not that all attention should be diverted for the maintenance of the maintenance of the body, but at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. Just like if one has a car, one has to maintain the car. If one doesn't maintain the car, it will break down and one won't get any use from it. If one doesn't maintain the body, it will break down and then we'll find that it demands so much of our attention. And we won't be able to get any use for it in the service of Krishna. So therefore, the balance is always required. The tendency is to make the body the center, but not that we should make the body the center, but we should make Krishna the center and maintain the body so it can be properly used in Krishna's service. But at the same time, one's bodily maintenance should not be neglected. As long as the body exists, one can thoroughly study the Vedic instructions. And thus, at the end of life, one can achieve perfection. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 8.6, Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavam Tyajan Yante Kalevaram. Everything is examined at the time of death. So however sincerely we have made our attempt, it will be examined at the time of death, and we will get our just reward. So we may make our attempt to bluff in our lives, and we can say so many things about why we're doing this and doing that, but if we haven't developed truly our dependence on Krishna and our Krishna consciousness, then at the time of death our bluff will become apparent, especially to us. We won't have the strength, the spiritual strength, to hold on tightly to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual masters, and Krishna. So this is the test. 8.6. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevaram. Everything is examined at the time of death, because whatever one's bhava or consciousness is at the time of death, one is transferred. Adhisthayam manasthayam visya upasevate. One is transferred to that type of body. Therefore, although the body is temporary, not eternal, one can take from it the best service and make one's life perfect. Text 40. More on the body, comparing it to a true tree. If we uproot it, everything dries up if we don't maintain it. In this regard, Prabhupada explains in his purport to text 40, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Papanchakataya buddhya hari sambandhi vastana Mamukshubhi parityago vairagyam valgo katyate. One who rejects things without knowledge of their relationship to Krishna is incomplete in his renunciation. When the body is engaged in the service of the Lord, one should not consider the body material. Sometimes the spiritual body of the spiritual master is misunderstood. But Srila Rupa Goswami instructs, Prapanchakataya buddhya harisambandhi vastuna. The body fully engaged in Krishna's service should not be neglected as material. One who does neglect it is false in his renunciation. If the body is not properly maintained, it falls down and dries up like an uprooted tree, from which flowers and fruit can no longer be obtained. And what is the benefit of getting flowers and fruit from the tree of the body? That they can be offered to Krishna. And that's the body can, through its working, through whatever abilities that Krishna has blessed it with, can come up with so many fruits, or just a few fruits, depending upon what type of a bodily tree we possess. But whatever fruits come from it, they should all be offered in Krishna's service. Therefore, the body, the Vedas, without the body, the fruits and flowers can no longer maintain. The Vedas therefore enjoin, Om iti satyam netyantram taretad pushpam paramvachayat satyam. So there's a long Sanskrit quotation from the Vedas. The purport is that activities performed with the help of the body for the satisfaction of the Absolute Truth, Om Tat Sat, are never temporary, although performed by the temporary body. Indeed, such activities are everlasting. Therefore, the body should be properly cared for. Because the body is temporary, not permanent, one cannot expose the body to being devoured by a tiger or killed by an enemy. All precautions should be taken to protect the body. There's the practical application of the detachment. Everything has to be balanced with the theoretical and the practical. But the practical should be always in conjunction with the theoretical, not independent from it. Because the practical should be adjusted according to the ideal, not away from the ideal. This is the great benefit of knowing Shastra. Text 41, Sukrit Sharj explains about Om. And its relationship to money and becoming, giving to the poor. Bali Maharaj wanted to give everything to Vamanadev, who had appeared as a beggar. But Sukracharya, being Bali Maharaj's familial spiritual master in the line of seminal succession, could not appreciate Bali Maharaj's promise. Sukracharya gave Vedic evidence that one should not give everything to a poor man. Rather, when a poor man comes for some charity, one should untruthfully say, whatever I have given you, I have no more. It is not that one should give everything to him. Actually, the word Om is meant for Om Tat Sat, the Absolute Truth. Omkar is meant for freedom from all attachment to money, because money should be spent for the purpose of the Supreme. The tendency of modern civilization is to give money and charity to the poor. Such charity has no spiritual value, because we actually see that although there are so many hospitals and other foundations and institutions for the poor, according to the three modes of material nature, a class of poor men is always destined to continue. Even though there are so many charitable institutions, poverty has not been driven from human society. Therefore, it is recommended here, Bhikshave savam om kurvan nalam kamena chatmane. One should not give everything to the beggars among the poor. The best solution is that of the Krishna consciousness movement. This movement is always kind to the poor, but only because it feeds them, not only because it feeds them, but also because it gives them enlightenment by teaching them how to become Krishna conscious. So let the temporary needs that everyone has, including poor, including rich, let all those temporary material needs be dealt with in such a way that everyone spiritually advances. That's the principle. Not that we become hard-hearted and become and lack compassion for people who suffer. That's actually very much un-Vaishnava-like. The callousness of heart to someone who doesn't feel the pain of others, like Prahlad Maharaj, para-dukha-dukhi. It is practical against what's required, the softness of heart that's required to be a devotee, actually. But yet, the help that should be given to people, the temporary help that everyone requires, should be given to people and should be accepted in such a way that it goes for their spiritual advancement, not opposite spiritual advancement. And the spiritual needs should be understood to be the ultimate need. Because if we gain one material facility, we'll still have a material need tomorrow. And again, ultimately, even if every disease of the body is cured on one level, still the body must die. Even if one spends one's entire energy of one's entire life maintaining the body, still the body must die. So it's a losing battle. It's a lost cause. It's like burning money. It's like burning our time, because you can't win. It will never be gained. But yet, we need the material. We can't do without the material, because the material used in Krishna's service will be spiritualized. So therefore, all the material needs should be done in such a way that we make spiritual advancement, so that the eternal is cared for. And this is an art. This is the practical art of applied Krishna consciousness. The tendency of modern civilization is to give money and charity to the poor, but it has no spiritual value, because even though there are so many methodologies and institutions and foundations and banks for helping the poor, is it that poverty will ever be alleviated? No. There's the future promise that yes, in the future, but actually it can't be done. Therefore, it is recommended here, Bhikshave Savamom Kurvan Nalam Kamena Chatmani. One should not give everything to the beggars amongst the poor. The best solution is that of the Krishna consciousness movement. This movement is always kind to the poor, but not only because it feeds them, but because it also gives them enlightenment by teaching them how to become Krishna conscious. The eternal must saturate everything. This is the principle. We are therefore opening hundreds and thousands of centers for those who are poor, both in money and in knowledge, to enlighten them in Krishna consciousness and reform their character by teaching them how to avoid illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling, which are the most sinful activities and which cause people to suffer life after life. Prabhupada has said on more than one occasion that his disciples asked him, what was your program? What were you expecting when you came to the West, to the United States at first? And Prabhupada said, I didn't really have a program, because I expected, soon as that I say no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, that everyone will say, go away, we don't want any, go back to India. And quite different from how Srila Prabhupada spoke. There are so many sannyasis and holy people that come from India that their lines were always that it's okay to eat meat. I one time was talking to a very wealthy Indian in Hong Kong so many years ago, and his guru had told, when his guru was staying at his house, it was quite a famous Hatha Yoga guru, and he was staying at his house, and they were sitting at the table and eating breakfast, and this man was not a vegetarian, although the guru was a vegetarian. So he was in front of the guru, he wasn't eating any meat. So the guru said, why aren't you eating meat? He said, I didn't want to do it in front of you. He said, but are the tigers of the jungle the same as the lambs? So he was saying, you're a tiger. Maybe in his next life he was going to become a tiger, or some kind of a jackal more likely. But he was giving him full sanction. He wasn't telling him of the karma, of the sin, of the reactions, of the suffering that comes. I heard a tape this morning of Prabhupada speaking with the poet Allen Ginsberg, who is now quite dead and moved on. But the first thing he was telling Prabhupada about this Richard Alpert, who later on became famous as called Ramdas or something. He took shelter of this. He was a Harvard professor in the 60s, and he started taking LSD. Timothy Leary. And then after some time, he went to India. He actually went to Vrindavan. And he met a guru there who still has an ashram there. Now he's also quite dead. But his guru told him, for you Westerners, LSD is like Jesus. Very good. Keep going. So everyone said, now this is a real guru. This is a guru that we all like, because he'll tell us to continue doing all the nonsense that we're doing. And then, so he said, anyway, Allen Ginsberg said this to Prabhupada. And he quoted this guru saying that in this way you'll get liberation, detachment and liberation. So Prabhupada said, Prabhupada was in a gentle, because sometimes Prabhupada would get very, very heavy, but he didn't get very heavy with him. He just got logical. He said, LSD is material. If you take shelter of something material, how will you get free from matter? How will you get free from material when the thing that you're taking shelter of itself is material? And Allen Ginsberg agreed. So there are so many so-called gurus, but who will say that if you take intoxication, you will suffer in this life, you'll suffer in the next life. You'll suffer, suffer, suffer. If you engage in illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, these are the most sinful activities, Prabhupada says, and they cause people to suffer life after life, in this life and in the future life. And everyone knows this. The Prabhupada, he would say it very, very straight. So because this education is there, this straightforward education is there in the temples, and that's what the temples are supposed to do, have processes, have the process of hearing and chanting, direct speaking about Krishna going on. Tandera charana sevi bhakti sanivas janame janame hoye abhilas. To put one in touch with the hearing process, the hearing and chanting process about Krishna. So the best way to use money is to open such a center where all may come and live and reform their character. They may live very comfortably without denial of any of the body's necessities, but they live under spiritual control, and thus they live happily and save time for advancement in Krishna consciousness. So the bodily needs are taken care of. That's the concept. But in a simple way, a basic way, which allows one to put one's energy into one's spiritual advancement. I remember Ravindra Sarup telling me that, I read it somewhere where that he wrote when he first went to the temple in Philadelphia in the early 70s, and he heard no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. These things will cause you so much trouble, they're sinful, they're bad. His first reaction was, at least someone has the courage to speak the truth. So Prabhupada had that courage, even though on more than one occasion he said, I thought when as soon as I said this, they would throw me away. They would tell me to go away. If one has money, it should not be squandered away on nothing. It should be used to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement so that all of human society will become happy, prosperous, and hopeful of being promoted back home, back to Godhead. And the final verse in short purport, well, not the final verse, but the final 42, where he's talking about saying that you have nothing. You have to lie a little bit. Okay, say I've given you already a good. I don't have anything more. Sorry. Prabhupada's purport. Beggars always present themselves as possessing nothing. And this may be very good for them, because in this way they are assured of not losing their money and of always drawing the attention and compassion of others for the sake of collection. But this is also condemned. If one purposely continues this professional begging, he's supposed to be dead while breathing. Or according to another interpretation, such a man of falsity should be killed while still breathing. The Vedic injunction in this regard is as it follows: Atetet purnam abhyatmam yan neti sayat savam neti bruyat papikashya kirtir jayate sanam tatraiva hanyat. If one continuously poses himself as possessing nothing and collects money by begging, he should be killed. Sanam tatraiva hanyat. Very strong injunction. So the pastime of Bali Maharaj and Brahman Dev and Sukhacharya goes on. And tomorrow, Krishna willing, we'll continue with chapter 20. Bali Maharaj surrenders the universe. So he's going to reply to his spiritual master Sukhacharya's orders to get somehow or another get out of the promise that you've made to give those three steps of land to Brahman Dev, because he says Brahman Dev will take everything. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Bali Maharaj Vamana Devi ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.